Blog Talk Radio.
This is Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla. Make sure you check us out on blogtalkradio.com. Get Deep and Keep It Real. You can also find us on Facebook, Get Deep and Keep It Real, and of course on Twitter. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome to hit us up on our Facebook account and on our Twitter account. So any comments or questions or any special requests for guests or show topics, please always feel free to hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. And if you would like to call into the show, please do. Our number is 347-215-9738. That's 347-215-9738. You're listening to Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to a very special edition of Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla. I know you're surprised that I'm on the air today, but there's just been so many things on my mind that I really wanted to discuss with you. And so that brings me to my topic for today. I'm going to be interviewing a gentleman by the name of Mr. Charles Belk, a native of North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, who is now residing in California. And I'm sure many of you have heard in the last week or so, Mr. Belk was wrongly arrested by the Beverly Hills Police Department and held for over 6 hours. And this is just one of many stories that's going on in our country today. And what I really want to discuss in this 30 minutes with Mr. Belk is I want him to share his story with us, but also I want to just kind of delve into what's really going on in our community, what's really going on here in America. Why is there such a disconnect, not only in our own communities, but as a nation? Why aren't we able to have conversations with cops? Why are cops just randomly killing our young black men? Why are our own black men randomly killing each other? I mean, there's just so many different layers to this issue, and everybody only wants to look at their own issue. We're not looking at it as a collective, and I think that's what the problem is. But enough of what I think the problem is. Let's get Mr. Belk on the line, and let's get deep, and let's keep it real. Hello, Mr. Belk. How are you?
I am great. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm so happy to have you on my show today. As a North Carolinian myself, it was heartbreaking for me to read your story. I cried when I read it because I was hurt because I felt like you could have been my father, my husband, my brother, my son. And it's just, how long do we continue to let these things go on without speaking out and doing something about it?
The incredible part is that I think what you just said is key, because it's been going on for a long time. We all know that. And I'm fortunate that I'm able to sit here today and talk to you about it. And there's so many, those that we know about and those that we don't know about, that has happened to, that didn't survive the circumstances to be able to tell their story. There's so many that this happened to that are incarcerated, still under false arrest and can't tell their story. I experienced a little bit of that Friday evening, and so I'm just glad I have this forum now to be able to talk to you and others about this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so thankful that you just didn't let it happen, that you didn't try to just go quietly away, that you were determined to get your story out. And not only that, now you're working, you're doing various things to try to not necessarily correct the problem, but make everyone aware and to help others to understand what next steps we need to take. I mean, what's your view on that?
Well, it's interesting from the standpoint that when I, you know, I was a little distraught when I got home last Saturday morning at 2:30 in the morning, and you know, I just sat up and I just thought through this whole thing, and I was trying to retrace my steps. You know, was I walking a particular way that would make this person think I was, you know, guilty of something? Did I do something to contribute to this? And at the end of all that, you know, I concluded there was absolutely, absolutely nothing that I did wrong or could have done differently to make that night go any differently. I think that, you know, because of what was reflecting in my mind when, you know, I was shocked at first when he looked at me. I gave him a look like, really, you want me to sit down? Are you serious? And but then once I realized that, yeah, he was serious, I proceeded to, you know, never give him a reason or any of the cops around me throughout the night that I had no intent of not fully cooperating with them, because you see the images of on TV of what happens when law enforcement think you aren't going to cooperate with them. And I didn't want to be one of those images. So I just kind of completely stayed calm and fully cooperated. You know, however, I think that there is, you know, opportunity here, and it's been amazing. I don't know if you went to I'm sure you went to my Facebook page, Charles Bell.
Yeah.
But of my original post and of the posts that I've done since then, I would say there's probably been easily over 10,000 comments that have come in, and I've probably received another 1,000 Facebook messages. There are so many people that something exactly like this or very similar has happened to, but you didn't hear their story. They didn't tell their story. And I don't get it. I don't understand that because at a minimum, and maybe they did. Maybe they did a post like I did, because that would have been the extent of me telling my story. When I did my post on last Saturday, that was me venting. That was me, you know, look, this happened to me, and I'm sad, and here you go. And so while I did, you know, because I'm in marketing and because I do social media marketing, I, you know, took it a step further and decided to try to push it out a little bit. And I am glad that it got accepted. And I think that it just shows the state of our country right now, how fed up with this that people are, that Americans are, not just black males, not just black people. Americans are fed up with, you know, the mistreatment that they are seeing by law enforcement on individuals.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that point up, because I would like to point out that, you know, this just doesn't really happen just to black Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans. This happens to, we just don't hear about it as much. And I think one reason why I really wanted to do this show, and also just to point out that it can happen to any one of us. And I really want to urge those of us in the African-American community to reach out to our Latino and Asian and, you know, even white brothers and sisters, because, you know, at times they can be stereotyped as well.
Let me chime in for 1 second, because I want to be clear. This is not you know, my whole process is not me ranting and complaining about any individual officer or law enforcement in general. What my rant and rave is about processes that are in place. From the standpoint that I truly understand that law enforcement have a difficult job. I wouldn't want that job. They have a difficult job. They put their lives out there for us. And so they probably have to be a little bit more cautious when they're walking down the street or approaching a situation than we have to be. That piece I get. I also get that crimes are broken. And so you have some sense, some evidence that someone committed a crime. So as part of those steps to figure out who really did it, you got to talk to somebody. You got to approach someone. So you get a general description, you know, it was a male. So that gets rid of all the females, right? But you don't go out and stop all 500 million males out to start questioning them. So then you get another description and another description. So you kind of weed that down until you can start talking to the right person. However, Hispanic male, 5'5", is not a good enough description. Tall, black, bald male is not a good enough description. It leaves it too open, and it allows for you to be discriminated against unfairly. But let's even stop there and say that's all the description we have. So as a law enforcement agent, we have to do something. I get that. I get that the only description you had to this crime, apparently, was a bald black male that was tall. And I was close to the vicinity, and so you stopped me. Now, question me, right? Sit me down, so you can take the threat away so that I'm not going to do anything. Pat me down, check for weapons. That's good. But then that's when a process of equal rights and fair human treatment need to kick in. Once you determine that I am a non-hostile threat, you have me, right? You have me to question me. There's no need to handcuff me and do all these other things to me. And I think that that's some of the things that society is fed up with when they see that piece of it, because that's what's portrayed in the media.
Right, exactly. And one thing that you touched on that I want to kind of go further into is that humanity, somehow as a country, we've kind of lost humanity with each other, but especially within our police departments. That humanity, that community type of policing in many communities has been lost. And we've gone to a more it's them against us type of mentality and a more militarized type of policing like we saw in Ferguson. And I think that's also a very big concern of mine. And I think we're sleeping on this as, you know, a nation. Why aren't we requiring more of our police officers as far as education and training and psychological testing before they're allowed to become a police officer?
Yeah, and not only that piece of it, the question also begs the retraining of police officers, because I think you get to a point, and I'm going to just give you a quick example. I've been doing these interviews all week, talking with you and other folks. And so, you know, probably by yesterday, as I had told the story so many times, I wanted to move into more conversation like this. And I was told that because I was assuming that, wow, I've said this story so many times, so I just know everybody knows the story. And somebody pointed out to me that, no, not everybody knows the story yet, so you still got to tell the story. But I just got so comfortable with the fact that I knew the story that it became routine to me, much like my assumption is that police officers, law enforcement see crime committed so much that it's routine to them. They forget that they're, you know, it's not the same person that's committing the crime. So even though they see a black male committing a crime, it's not the same one that committed it yesterday. This person is still should be afforded his due process, his rights under the Constitution and under whatever state laws you're working under need to be afforded to him. He's not the same person that you just arrested yesterday and should know that he shouldn't have did this or he should do this or blah, 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 you know. And so I think that over time it becomes a routine and some of the steps in the process are forgotten. So retraining is equally important as, you know, some good training in the beginning.
Right. Great point. And I honestly feel that sometimes we are chosen for a particular task or job by the universe. And I really feel like as unfortunate as it was that this happened to you, I'm kind of relieved that it was a person such as you that this happened to. Number one, to help draw the attention to the situation, and also there was nothing they could point to as being wrong and negative. And I just wanted to know how, I know it's probably too soon to really say, but how has this changed your life? What kind of efforts do you think you're now going to be making? What kind of conversations are you going to be having with friends, neighbors, family members of how to act or how to be in this country? Because sometimes I do feel as if, you know, I've lived all over the world, and it's kind of sad to say that. Sometimes I feel like I'm not even a citizen in my own country, that I don't even feel comfortable. And so I can't, as a woman of color, I feel this way. So I can't even imagine as an African-American man in this country how it must feel sometimes.
Well, it's interesting what you said, because, you know, I caught flack from some folks, minimum, but some folks that says, hey, you know, dude, you didn't lose your life. You didn't lose a limb. You was hemmed up for a few hours of your life. Well, big deal. Get over it. Because they were, that was in reference to, you know, me kind of, you know, saying this was a life-altering experience for me. It was a life-altering experience.
Yes.
It changed the way my life was before. You might be used to this in your life. You may get stopped all the time and arrested and kept in jail. I get it. That's your life. My life was, you know, fairly simple when it came to interaction with law enforcement, because I stayed away from them. I grew up in the South. I've always been big and black. So, you know, I've always kind of been under somebody's radar for something. And I've found the best way to stay on the right side of the law is just, you know, walk very softly and carry no stick. And so, you know, I've been able to avoid being arrested and being thrown in jail. So for me, it was a big deal. But again, my goal was simply to express it, let a few people know about it, and then move on from it. It wasn't until the thousands of Facebook comments that started coming in that I realized a couple of things, and one being that people, you know, overwhelmingly, people's like, you know, hey, man, I don't know you. I'm sorry that this happened to you in one way, but in another way, I am glad it happened to you, because you seem to be the person that could give a voice to this, the person that, you know, can put a face to this. And I was like, yeah, okay, I hear you. And I started thinking, I was just talking with friends the other day. I was like, you know, I really don't mind telling my story at all and what happened to me, because I really feel people need to know. But I'm not on any type of, let me say this here for the very first time publicly, I am not on any mission to become, you know, the next civil rights leader, the next face of civil rights. That is, you know, that is just not in my plan. I do believe, because I believe in what you said about things happen for a reason. I truly believe that. It's unfortunate that this happened to me, but it did happen to me. And so I am now allowing, you know, the Lord to lead my life in that direction. So I'm going to do what I can without stepping, you know, way over my boundaries and way outside of my lane. I'm going to do what I can, because I'm also an adjunct instructor. I teach myself. And being with my niece that attends North Carolina Central University, and she's in the ethnics class, and she said this came up in class. So, hey, that's my uncle. And they reached out to me. Yeah, they reached out to me to speak to the class, and so I actually spoke to two sections of an ethics class at North Carolina Central University in Durham yesterday via Skype. And the first class, I just kind of rolled – the first section, I just kind of rolled out the story because, you know, media was there and it was just kind of a presentation. The second class, however, gave me the opportunity – the second section gave me the opportunity to interact with students and answer their questions. And there's a lot of questions out there. And there's a lot of experiences that have even happened to these young people, you know, at such an early age that they can relate to this kind of stuff, and they want to know, you know, what could they have done. So there's an opportunity here to educate and teach not only law enforcement officers or the policymakers, but also our next generation, the people who will be the victims, the people who will be victimizing the victims, and the people that will set the policy that governs all of that. And so now is the time to make sure that we're, because, you know, today is the day. The way our society is right now will not change right now. However, the way our society is today can certainly change in the future. And it all starts with what those young minds sitting in classes are thinking and how they're feeling about it so they could potentially change it. And that making it a teacher moment is enjoyable to me. Now, I can get behind that. I can get behind educating. I can't get behind being a face and marching and being that civil rights person, but I can definitely get behind two things. One, this being a teachable moment and there's people that can learn from it. And two, the power of one voice and social media.
Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, you're really touching on two things that, you know, I think are extremely important. Educating and understanding that, no, not from a celebrity standpoint, not from a political standpoint, but just at home in our own neighborhoods, in our own apartment buildings, in our own classrooms, in our own homes and living rooms. It starts there. It doesn't start outside of us. It starts inside of us. And then it flows outward. And I really feel like that's been missing from us. And I think that starting with you, maybe that could start again.
Yes, and you know the scary thing is that you as a journalist know that everything has this new, what we call a news cycle. So a story like this typically would have, you know, a 1, 2, maybe 3-day news cycle. And on Wednesday when all the interviews were happening on Thursday, because it was like 14 hours worth of interview, kicked off at 5 a.m. on CNN, included, you know, it included Inside Edition and headline news and just a bunch of stuff during the day and ended up about 7:30 at night. And so I said, well, this is going to be done with this news cycle, but the fact is just because it's not popular on TV anymore don't mean that the story still doesn't need to be told from an education standpoint. So that's one what's exciting about, you know, making it into a teachable moment and then trying to figure out how to let the story live, because we all know, unfortunately, whether it's later today, whether it's next week, whether it's next month, we're going to see an image of another black male killed, you know, probably unjustifiable by law enforcement. We unfortunately know we're going to see that. And then, you know, folks are going to want to have the dialogue again. And for my stuff, and I wanted to say suffering, but I really don't want to offend anybody who has truly suffered, you know, worse than me on a situation like this. But, I, you know, hopefully we're going to want to have the conversation again about my experience. And so I want to make sure that something has been done. And that's why, you know, I was very relieved to hear on Thursday when the Beverly Hills Police Department or the city of Beverly Hills announced that they're going to do an internal, you know, they admitted that there was some process that they missed with me. And taking my complaint, you know, they're taking my complaint serious, and they are going to do an internal review of their police force.
Right.
And so that made, you know, that said, wow, you know, that shows you that my one post and then that social media kind of viral spread of it, and then the online media picking it up, and then the television media picking it up, has allowed me to give a voice for all of those folks that didn't have a voice in the past, which I'm now deeming the voiceless. And so they have not had a voice in the past, and this is now giving them that voice. And so it starts small. It starts with the Beverly Hills Police Department. Now, the interesting thing is that the Beverly Hills Police Department apologized to me for what they did to me, only, in my opinion, because it became so public. There, you know, it was a lot of heat for them to apologize. What about, because I've been getting countless numbers of stories from folks who have explained the same things or similar things that's happened to them in Beverly Hills. What about those people? Go through your files for everybody that you have arrested and took away their rights from them and then said, oops, it wasn't you. You know, reach out and apologize to those folks. They are no different than me. They deserve the same kind of treatment. And so, and then, you know, this is not just happening in Beverly Hills. So, you know, there's a ton of police outfits that I'm sure this same thing has happened. So how do we create this across the country? For so many years, you know, people have either stayed silent or have tried to tell their story and just nobody would listen to it, or try to tell their story and they just got to run around and didn't know where to go next. And so that is what I think needs to be created. That's the only way change is going to create it. And so I'm a true believer that you might have one voice, but your one voice can make a difference and make a change.
Definitely. And that's why I wanted to emphasize that, you know, these conversations don't only have to exist on social media, on the internet, or on television or radio, but in our own classrooms, churches, homes, neighborhoods, on the street corner, whatever.
Right.
You know,
yeah, I agree.
They need to be. And I really want to point out to my listeners and kind of thank you, because, as I said, I read your story, I do believe, the same day you posted it, which was it last Sunday?
It was last Saturday, actually.
Saturday,
I got out Saturday morning. I got home probably about 2:30 in the morning, and
right.
I posted about, I don't know, sometime between 3 and 6 p.m. I can't remember, but, yeah, it was Saturday afternoon. And by Sunday, surprisingly enough, when I looked at it at, you know, midday and it had 5,000 shares, I was like, wait a minute,
wow.
What?
Yeah. And so it was either Saturday or Sunday I reached out to you expressing my concern and my interest in wanting to share your story. And so I just want to speak to your integrity because, you know, after that, you were bombarded by, you know, all the other national media, but yet you were still humble enough to come and say, yes, you're still going to do my show. So I really appreciate that, you know.
Yeah, and thank you so much. And I want to, hopefully for any of your listeners who, you know, will hear this and they say, well, I reached out to him and he didn't respond back to me. Trust me when I tell you, I've been so overwhelmed with trying to keep up. I'm so behind because, you know, for a while I was trying to answer every message and trying to, you know, read every post, and it just became overwhelming. And I just want to take and publicly thank right now two people, Robin Harrison from the NAACP Hollywood Bureau and Flo McAfee, who is from Summerland Studios, who has kind of helped me tremendously and guided me through this process. This week and these interviews and sharing this story would have not been possible without those two.
Awesome. Well, we have about a minute and a half left. And so, Mr. Belk, I just want, as a fellow North Carolinian, I'm from Raleigh, graduate of UNC Chapel Hill, so I just had to, you know, give out that shout-out to North Carolina and everything. But
absolutely.
What can we do, or what is your vision? What are your hopes for a quote-unquote a happy ending, if there's ever one, to this story?
Interesting enough, and, you know, I posted this yesterday. Yesterday marked, it was 1 week later. 1 week later that the awful incident turned into awareness and action. 1 week later that the world has become aware and action actually has been taken. It's 1 week later that Beverly Hills Police Department is conducting an internal review. A voice has been given to the voiceless. And we continue this effort by, you know, kind of moving it into teachable moments for students. So at 1 week after this, it just goes to show that we all have the ability to be part of change. And if we specifically turn an ineptitude into action, and that's what I ask your listeners to do.
Okay, great. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. And, in fact, I'm going to be continuing a conversation very similar to this on Monday night. I'm going to be speaking with an organization called Brown Bag Solidarity Group, and they organized a little demonstration, so to speak, last Monday, where they asked for African Americans not to go shopping or go to buy lunch to honor the death of Michael Brown. So it was kind of like a boycott. So I'm going to be speaking with them on Monday at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, because I'm in New Orleans, but they're on the East Coast. So that would be 11 o'clock East Coast, 10 o'clock Central Time, and then that's what, 8 o'clock Pacific Time. So
okay.
If you're free, please make sure you listen, and if you like, you're more than welcome to call in and join in on the conversation. But
absolutely.
I would really, once
invite.
Again, I thank you for joining my show today. I'm very appreciative. It was something that I really, really wanted to speak on, and I hope whenever I'm visiting L.A., I can give you a call and such.
Absolutely. Please do.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great show.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla. I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please hit me up on Facebook, Get Deep and Keep It Real, or send me a tweet on Get Deep and Keep It Real on Twitter. Or if it's extremely long, you can always send me an email, Get Deep and Keep It Real, all one word, @gmail.com. You've been listening to Get Deep and Keep It Real with Tiffany Camilla, and as I said, please join me for another special show on Monday evening, where I will be speaking with Brown Bag Solidarity and their efforts to form a sort of, you know, silent protest and just honoring the death of Michael Brown and, you know, asking us not to shop. That was like last Monday, but we're going to just kind of talk about their organization and all the different things that they're trying to do for the community. So until then, have a great, safe holiday weekend. Peace, love, and happiness.